Before we get started with the episode, golfers, playing better golf doesn't have to come from hours and hours of practice. Optimized equipment could be all you need to shoot lower scores. At Second Swing, our award-winning Master Fitters use state-of-the-art technology and world-class training and knowledge to dial in golfers every day. Whether you're a beginner, a seasoned pro, or anything in between, you will save strokes with a Second Swing Tour Van fitting. Schedule your fitting today at secondswing.com. Hey golfers, and welcome back to another episode of Second Swing Thoughts. And today, two special guests from the University of Minnesota men's team. We have Brock Winter and Bennett Swavely. Did I pronounce that right?
That's right.
I did.
Yes, sir.
We're off to a great start.
Good start.
Brock and Bennett are here from the Gophers. Their offseason sort of just began. So we brought them in. We wanted to talk a little bit about the D1 golf experience and sort of their insights on maybe helping some other golfers out there achieve their goals, whether it's a junior player or maybe it's someone that's hacking it away on the weekends and wants to play a little bit better. But as we did with your teammates, we're going to start with some rapid-fire questions. So, and you guys have the benefit of knowing what those questions are because you just watched the previous one be recorded. So we're going to start, Bennett, with would you rather make an ace or an albatross?
An albatross. I've already made an ace, so.
Okay.
I'm fine, I got one checked
Brock?
Off.
I'd say for me it depends. I mean, am I taking an ace from 130 yards over a 240-yard albatross? No. But am I taking a 240-yard ace over a 240-yard albatross every day of the week?
Okay. That's a fair answer. I like that because not all – I feel like most albatrosses are relatively similar, right? You're hitting a longer club, usually longer distance. Some aces, though, can be pretty short and cute.
But I got something for you.
Yeah.
So my first ace is on a par three course, 77 yards. Do we count that or do we not?
Oh, that's a great question. I think. What is Bennett?
It's par three. And it's,
I don't count it.
No?
No.
So is that? Do you have another ace?
I do. Okay. I got made one this summer, yeah.
Okay, so you have an ace.
I do.
That's good then, because now that question's not just like looming over
exactly.
your head, you know. I don't know. I maybe we'll have a comment on that if an ace on a par three course counts. Another one I have for you then. I played in a scramble this weekend. That was it wasn't the scramble part, but it was a big cup.
Okay.
That doesn't count, right?
Yeah.
No, it's like a
larger than normal size hole.
No.
Okay. Say that counts.
Okay. No, I had to see, you know. I know. There's a lot of qualifiers out there. It's like, you know, if somebody hits the third shot on the scramble or whatever, you know, does that count?
I also think in a scramble, whosever ball you take, they have to play first. Because if they keep playing last and then they like you take their shot every time, they say you made a natural birdie.
Yeah.
But you got to see everybody.
But you had to see three putts.
So I think that should be a rule that.
Yeah. I
think
that.
I would if I was a
if you're gonna be the group that calls out natural birdies.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we're setting the rules here today
are.
on the Second Swing Thoughts podcast. All right, Brock. Dream foursome, the other three players in your group.
I have to play Tiger Woods.
Yep.
I just think the knowledge that I gained from him would be awesome.
Yeah,
I'd probably throw the Pope in there come along for some knowledge.
Good. Wisdom.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then I'd say the fourth one's a hard one.
I just picturing like Tiger and the Pope just chopping it up.
Maybe like
Black Tip H.
Big fishing guy.
Okay. Yeah. Dude, these groups of four players. This is good. Wow. This is good. Are you gonna top that?
Then no, mine's gonna be pretty simple.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with Tiger Woods as well.
Okay. So Tiger's in all four now.
I think so.
We've had four members of the team all say Tiger.
Yeah. And then probably my dad.
Yep.
And the fourth one, I mean, I don't know. Maybe my brother.
Okay.
Just because.
That's like that.
A little family affair.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Keep it simple.
That is classic. And that's, it's very different. Very different answers, but I do appreciate that. It gives me a really good visual in my mind of how a golf round would go between that group of four people. So then I asked this one to your teammates, and it might not be a good question. It might be a bad question, but I'm going to ask it again anyway. To a pro that you guys emulate your game after a little bit. I'll start with you, Bennett.
So cliche, but I've always looked up to Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. Just specifically kind of around 2000 when he was kind of winning everything. his swing, every aspect of his game was just picture perfect mm-hmm. in my eyes. So trying to emulate some of my kind of what I do off of that is something that I always do. So
I mean, Tiger's the safest answer out there.
Yeah.
What doesn't he do well?
Right there.
Is that yours as well,
bro? Oh, no. I'd have to emulate, like, old Dustin Johnson. Great driver, good iron play, but can't hit a wedge within 20 feet of the stick, let alone, like, 3-putt from 10 feet.
Yeah.
Especially when the nerves are flying. That would be me.
I like...
If I could, I'd go Max Homa. Okay. Solid driver, ball striking.
Templetown.
Just Templetown.
Yeah.
Just so good.
I didn't mean for this to be, like, a way for you guys to take a shot at yourselves in your game.
Yeah, you gotta set some standards and humble yourself.
Yeah, get better. I suppose. But, no, those are... I mean, Dustin Johnson... one of the best ball strikers on the planet since he's been a pro golfer. So definitely not a bad thing. But all right, Brock, dinner you'd serve as a champion at Augusta?
I'd start with a side Caesar. Love side Caesar salad. I'd probably introduce a Mostaccioli, especially like Cassetta's Mostaccioli downtown St. Paul. Huge Mostaccioli fan. Maybe wrap it up with like a Pizookie, like a huge chocolate chip cookie with ice cream on top, just melts in your mouth. Just get me fired up for the week.
Wow. Bennett, what do you got?
I'd probably start with a house salad. And then I'd definitely throw some walleye in there.
Yeah.
I'm a huge walleye fan. A little tartar sauce and some lemon. Love that. And then, I mean, I'm a huge... I just have like kind of the little bowls of M&Ms kind of all around the side, like, you know? Really no dessert, but I would just have some M&M little bowls.
Yeah, during like the social hour.
Mix a little peanut butter M&Ms with some peanut M&Ms and some chocolate M&Ms. And
the difference between the peanut butter M&Ms and peanut M&Ms.
I'm not a fan of the peanut ones.
Okay.
Big believer in the
peanut butter.
The mini peanut butter ones.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a big Benny fan.
That's an important clarification.
Total opposite. So if you had those at the table, I wouldn't be here.
Well, they'll be there. So.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
Maybe I'll have to indulge.
Yeah, it's his call. You know, it's his decision. Okay. But good. Well, thank you guys for doing that and joining. Kind of wanted to get, because we had Ben and Jacob on, and then we wanted to get your perspective on things as well as, you know, being a D1 golfer at the University of Minnesota. We talked a little bit with them about sort of the day-to-day, what that looks like during in-season and out-of-season. And I guess from your perspective, I wanted to ask about when you were in high school or when you were a junior player and you kind of envisioned yourself playing college golf. What you're experiencing now, does it match what you expected it would, or is it different in a lot of ways?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's... similar in a lot of ways, but also a little different. I think that, you know, the early mornings for working out and the, you know, some late nights for hitting balls is something that I've always kind of, you know, I thought I would do when I got to college golf. And it is what I do here and there. But, I think it's just as much golf as I thought I would play. It's a lot of, you know, it's every single day, maybe a day off here and there. But... I think when I was a junior golfer, I think the biggest thing is I just wanted to see, you know, myself progressively get better year in and year out. And I think that's something that I've been seeing. I think that in a lot of ways it's very similar to what I expected. Mm-hmm. And I also knew a lot of guys who were, when I was a junior golfer, who were college golfers at the time. You know, they kind of prepared me for it a little bit. And so I kind of knew exactly what I was getting into when I did get here. So
because you guys are probably in season, I mean, probably every single day you're either playing golf or you're spending multiple hours on the practice area working on your game, right?
For
it's
sure.
Gotta be every I mean day. It's a real commitment. That's a ton of your time during your day, right?
Yeah.
And that's especially during the, you know, trying to balance the school and stuff. Has that been a challenge in that respect? I did the college golf thing a little bit, obviously not at the D1 level, but it's like 5 hours a day where you drive to the course, you play 18 holes, whatever, and then trying to do the schoolwork and stuff. It, the time management becomes a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the number one thing the college coaches and players talk about when you take a visit is time management. I've had many discussions, for example, like in high school, you go to class for six and a half hours a day, 5 days a week, and then you go to practice right after for 3 to 4 hours. In college, my first 3 years, I'd go to class for an hour and a half and be like, I need a nap before I go to practice. Right. And it's just, I mean, that's the time balance, being able to balance the homework with productively improving on your game and then simulating that throughout the weekend on a tournament weekend where you got to sometimes do homework after a 36-hole day and you're out there for 10, 11 hours. So
yeah,
the time balance is just, it's huge. Yeah. And if you get that down, then things are just a lot easier for your 4 years.
Right. Yeah. Right. And you guys have a similar schedule. Like, are you guys structuring your class schedules around golf, or how does that kind of flow? Or maybe you're structuring your when your practice time is around your class schedule. How does that work for you guys?
I think, just like a start to finish day for us, I think a pretty stock day would look like if we were working out in the morning, we'd get up around 5:50, 6 o'clock-ish, and then work out at from 6:30 to 7:30, shower, get some breakfast, and then we have, at Minnesota, we have classes from, I think it's like 8 a.m. to about 1 p.m., so all of our classes have to fit within that time slot. So we'll have, you know, classes from there. Some guys have classes on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Some guys have classes two times a week. It all kind of depends on majors and stuff like that. But yeah, class from 8 to 12, 1 o'clock-ish, and then we have practice or playing, depending on the season, from 1 to, or 2 to anywhere, but, you know, the 1 to 7-ish, I think, is usually where we're we're either practicing for that amount of time or we're playing or something like that, and then grab dinner right after. And then after that, it's either mostly the time it's just schoolwork.
Yeah.
Get those.
Right.
Get that schoolwork in and then.
Try to recover from the day and then you wake up and do it again.
Yeah. Very similar.
You guys
process.
Almost out at the golf course basically until it's like dark out at that point too?
Yeah. We've had many qualifying rounds where we cut it short a few holes because daylight prohibits the finishing for some groups. So it's unfortunate, but we manage what we get and. We just go from there.
One thing I was curious about too, we were talking right before kind of off air about just some of the courses in the area, and you know, we mentioned Les Bolstad, and you know, I brought it up kind of ironically because nowadays it's viewed as such this short park style, you know, and you guys probably don't play anything like that in tournaments, right? I mean, very rarely, so especially that shorted. So I guess what I'm asking is the style of golf course you play is probably a lot different than, you know, what the average player might be watching or listening is most likely playing themselves on the weekends.
Yeah, I'd say, so this fall, I think our shortest course we played was around 67, 6,800, and we played a course that was all the way up to tipping 76, 77.
Yeah.
So we're very fortunate. Obviously, pre-Gopher Invite that happens, our first event of the fall, we practice and play out at Windsong just to kind of prep. You know, the tee boxes we're playing, we get to manage the pin positions. Then after that, we're very fortunate. We've been out to Minneapolis Golf Club. So if there's a course that we're going to that's a little bit shorter, a little bit wider dispersion off the tee, we can kind of simulate the courses that we're going to go and travel to so that we feel prepared for the situations that we'll have for those tournaments.
Yeah. Because it seems like, you know, especially over the last 5-10 years, and we were talking about how Luke Donald won the Big Ten Championship at Les Bolstad, which I think is like 6,200 yards or something like that. He won it 25 years ago. And so distance has become such this huge, you know, it's become like the biggest piece of you know, becoming a good golfer nowadays is how far can I hit the ball? When you guys are working on your games and you're trying to get better, I mean, how much of it is hitting the ball further? I mean, are you guys doing, is there speed training in that? Is there finding ways to hit the ball further, or are you guys at the point now where you hit it far enough, you're like, I just give me the rest of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I'm basically built like a 4x4 compared to this kid who's built like a twig, so he can just flexible and hit it 360. Me, I have enough distance where I don't really need a speed train. For me, it's the putting side. I'm not the best putter, and especially the speed side of putting. It's kind of been something I've really focused on this fall side, credit to Larry Bobka for kind of showing me around the ropes and to improve on that aspect of things. But it's just wedges and putting for me now. Distance isn't the biggest problem. So.
Yeah, is that how it is for you, Bennett? Or
you
always looking to hit it further a little bit, or no?
Yeah, I think I'm always. I think you know, that is one thing that going back to like one of those first questions you asked is the difference between like college golf and junior golf.
Yeah.
I think you know, having a lot of length off the tee is a huge advantage, especially if you can hit it straight and, yeah. and hit it far. So that's something that I've definitely, you know, I realize that I have a pretty flexible body and I'm tall and skinny. Mm-hmm. And so trying to use that to my advantage is something that I've been working at the last 2 years. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's just having a lot of length off the tee is a big advantage and something that I'm always trying to work towards.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, I'm, you know, a little bit older than you guys, and I had my high school and college golf days, you know, years ago. But I kind of wish when I was in high school, there was somebody had told me a little bit like, hey, you should learn how to hit it further. You know, you should make distance more of a priority where, because to your point, it does seem like there's a large advantage to be had if you are hitting the ball 20, 30 yards further than maybe some of the competitors that you're playing with in your group from another school. You know, suddenly you're hitting a pitching wedge into the green and they're hitting maybe 6 iron or 7 iron.
Yeah. I mean,
that can make a big difference. And especially on some of these courses now where you said, I mean, 7,600 yards, that's a long ways. Mm-hmm. And so I imagine you guys, to some degree, knowing that you have that advantage, if you do hit it far enough or farther than someone, you probably psychologically, you kind of, it helps you a little bit during the round.
For sure. Yeah, I think the last 2 or 3 years, our coaching staff and our team has kind of realized that advantage of being long off the tee. Mm-hmm. And so we've actually started working with Jeremiah Hales out of Empower, which is like 2 minutes this way.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just helped us tremendously with understanding our bodies and understanding how different muscles work, understanding how, like, where power kind of comes from in the golf swing. And then really using that knowledge to put it towards, you know, different workouts or, you know, different, like, how some, you know, there's ways where, like, Brock might gain speed different than how, a different way than how I would
right.
gain speed. And so understanding that and just kind of accelerates the process of, you know, learning how to hit it farther and straighter and more accurate, everything. So,
yeah, it is. It's just crazy. I think distance is so much the name of the game now. And if you have a course that's 7,600 yards, I mean, you have to have mm-hmm. some distance to kind of keep up there. So, now one thing, you know, since we are sort of a golf equipment, you know, focused company here, I kind of wanted to ask a little bit about the equipment side for you guys and what you guys play and stuff. So, is there, I guess, going through your bag, I pose a different question to your teammates. So I'll pose you guys something a little bit different here. Maybe is there a most popular brand that you guys have in your bag? Like maybe you know, you have the most, maybe it's Titleist or Ping, or, you know, what brand is in your bag the most in your, of your 14 clubs?
I recently transitioned from, I was big into Ping and Titleist. I had Titleist irons for mm-hmm. many, many years. And then I transitioned to TaylorMade irons, and I've seen just a huge, huge gapping in just the dispersion side.
Really?
Brought it in. The wedges, short irons have just been awesome. And then actually I probably have one club that not many people in the entire world have in their bag. It's actually pretty new. I have the Larry Bobka LB1 putter in the bag right now.
Oh,
that he took
yes.
out of his trunk and threw in my bag, and I absolutely love it. It's a little bit heavier than like a Newport 2 Scotty Cameron, which gave me a little bit more feel around the face, and I've just been loving it. So.
Yeah, that's really cool. I will say I've been very much contemplating the LB1 irons.
Oh yeah.
They're good. And actually just, it's funny, a couple weeks ago I played and the 8-iron head, or the head of my 8-iron flew off. So now it's kind of like, well, it's almost fate. I have to.
You just have to.
I got to make
that
great. But
that's awesome.
The LB1 putter, that's
yep.
good. So it's for those who don't know, it's kind of like the old Answer style, you know, blade, kind of a very classic look, but mm-hmm. simplistic. But, you know, if you're a purist, I think you enjoy that look and feel to it.
So. For sure.
Ben, how about your bag? Anything, notable brands? Also,
no, I use club. A pretty mixed bag. I got Titleist, TaylorMade. I have used Mizuno in the past. I have Mizuno irons, but mm-hmm. I kind of got a mixed bag. No one brand that kind of sticks out.
Sure.
But one older club or unique club, I guess, that I have is I still have the Titleist H2 hybrid.
Really? That is.
I think they're maybe like $70 or $80 nowadays, but. Yeah, I still got that one in the bag, and I carry a 2-iron and a hybrid, just kind of depending on the course, and so.
Oh, is it kind of like a 15th club, essentially?
Well, yeah,
like, you know, like
yeah.
you pick and choose.
Exactly.
I have seen that before, and in some, mm-hmm. you know, guys on tour when we do our, you know, like winning what's in the bag, you know, mm-hmm. we see a lot of 15 clubs, and then you get the comments where it's like, yeah, 15 clubs, that's not allowed.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that's actually that. Talking about making that decision every week, because, or I guess every event or whatever it might be. I mean, is it more weather conditions? Is it course, or is it kind of both?
Yeah, I think there's two things that I really look at. Is one is the length of the rough, and then two is how much wind we're gonna have. If there's a course where the rough is pretty thick, I'll tend to use the hybrid, just so in case if I hit it in the rough, yeah. I can, you know, it's a little bit easier to get out, and longer par fours or par fives trying to get there in two. But if the course is pretty open and pretty firm, I'll just kind of chase, I'll put the 2-iron in and just kind of chase it on the ground, get it rolling. So yeah, those are the kind of the two main things that I look at when I'm deciding which one I want to put in the bag.
Yeah. Have you guys noticed, maybe since your junior golf days or high school golf days, have you guys paid more attention to the equipment side and sort of the fitting specs that you might have? Or is that something that you're kind of just like, here, Mr. Fitter, give me what I need and I'll just go play type of thing?
Yeah, I think it's kind of, as you age, obviously you get older, stronger, bigger, faster. So I wouldn't say that I know every club, every brand, every shaft model. I'd say one big transition I did was like I changed wedge shafts. So I kind of rocked the stock Vokey shafts, were a little bit lighter, got a little bit too much spin, launch a little bit high. So I threw in like a heavier lower flex wedge shaft, which kind of brought down the flight, and I can play around with the launching with that a ton. So that's been the only like big difference that has been a change in the past couple of years. So, but other than that, it's nothing too significant.
Right. Yeah. How about you, Bennett?
What was the question? I just kind of lost.
No, it was
what
just
was
like
saying.
if in high school, in terms of like paying attention to your equipment, the specs that you might be playing, you know, is that something you're still paying attention to? More now, or is it something that you're kind of just like, you give your clubs to the fitter and you're just like, but give me what I need, I'll go play.
Yeah, I'm about as. I don't look at really the details too much. I kind of let Larry just give me what I need. But when I was in high school and I kind of had to do everything by myself, I would look at, you know, every single time something came out, I was like, I need that, or, you know, I want to at least try it out. Whereas, you know, the more I've matured and the more I've gotten better at golf, I'm kind of like going away from that a little bit. It would really have to, you know, blow my doors off in order for me to switch to something. Especially like the lower in the bag I get, it's like the irons and the wedges, like it takes a lot for me to get something new. Drivers and woods, I'll toy around with a little bit, but I think that where I'm at now, I just kind of, the less tinkering the better.
Right.
Just kind of harder said than done.
As long as it's, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
Type of thing,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which if you're not swinging well, you kind of think it's the equipment, but usually it's not. It's usually you're swinging how you're swinging it. But
yeah. It's our Second Swing's old tagline. Our old slogan was, it's not you, it's your clubs.
Yeah.
You
know,
which maybe isn't entirely true. Yeah. But
it is for probably the majority of golfers out there that don't really know exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, it certainly can matter for a lot of players. And actually, we would probably, in some cases, argue that a mid or high handicap player would benefit more from, you know, a club fitting or getting something, you know, for their swing versus you guys, where you guys are dialing in, you know, everything about your games all the time, all year round.
For sure.
Yeah, I think the first time that I got fit, at least, like, I was just blown away by the difference and how much I didn't know about what I was playing. And then, and once you get a grasp of kind of what you need in your bag, you kind of lean off of it a little bit.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of like you guys in the sense that, you know, before I worked here, you know, I was an above average player at the time. I was probably a 2 or 3 handicap. You know, I had played a little bit in college, but I didn't really know what I was doing, you know. Mm-hmm. But I've learned so much, and you're right. Like, you go in there and the fitter says a couple things you don't even know what they mean.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden you're spitting out way better numbers. Your shots are way better. And so it's kind of a weird experience first time you get a real fitting.
For sure.
It makes a big difference. But okay, so let's kind of start to wrap up, and I asked your teammates, Ben and Jacob, the same question. I'll ask you guys as well. You know, looking back, or maybe looking at younger golfers out there, junior players that are eyeing Division I golf, maybe want to play for the Gophers someday, what type of advice would you give them to, you know, help them get to that level someday?
I'd say I'd probably focus a lot on driving, and then 50 yards and in onto the putting green. Try to hit your driver as hard as possible sometimes on the range. Try to get some speed, learn how your body works. And then the wedges, I mean, that's where a lot of these players succeed. It's not from 150 to 200 yards. Let's just get it on the green and then two putt and get out of there. But when we're inside 100 yards, let's try to make them. Mm-hmm. If you can make them, that's great. And then putting is crucial. Obviously, there's a ton of stats you can go putt. Like if you're missing your 5 footers, you're losing strokes. But if you're missing your 15 footers, you're not really losing strokes. But that's two putt. Lots of two putts. My goal is I've gone 11 rounds without a three putt. So
are you serious?
That's my recent.
That's a real stat. Okay.
And so I'm gonna try to beat that this spring. So we'll see how that goes.
I go maybe 11 holes without a three putt. Yeah. 11 rounds without a three putt is actually one of the most wild things I've ever heard.
That's nuts.
Good for you. I don't know what else to say to that, but that's good. So So your advice for the younger players is to not three putt for 11 holes or 11 rounds,
yes.
And then they'll be good.
Yeah, for sure.
Bennett, what do you got?
I think it's just kind of staying consistent day in and day out with everything that you're doing. I think, you know, staying on top of eating healthy, working out, doing drills consistently every day. Just the little things I think go a really long way in achieving like long-term goals. So that's just the biggest thing I would say. I keep it pretty simple, is just do the little things right. And then just enjoy the process and don't get ahead of yourself. I think that's what a lot of us did. We just fell in love with it and just played golf every day and did the same stuff every day.
I suppose that's part of it, is if you're going to play that much golf and practice that much, you better love it.
You better.
And better enjoy it. So
for sure.
Brock and Bennett, thank you guys for joining. That was very insightful, very good. And I know I hinted at this before. If you haven't yet, check out the YouTube channel. We're going to have some content on there from, with the Gophers men's team. So, but thank you guys for joining. Really good stuff. And I guess for those listening and viewing, we will catch you next time.
Like, comment, subscribe, hit the notification bell.
Oh, I love that.